Welcome to the Learning Well podcast, where we take learning seriously, but not ourselves.
So you probably noticed our last episode ran rather long. We were considering what we think to be four key topics that impact our industry, and we got a little bogged down in learning science. So never fear. Today, we plan to move much faster. We're going to get through our next three topics and also have some fun at the end. So in the previous podcast, we considered the various sciences that an instructional designer or learning experience designer might think through before starting to design some kind of learning. But we have three other topics that I think are really crucial to our industry right now and really crucial for a learning experience designer to understand kind of the ramifications and how they impact our job and our industry. So I really asked Jerry and Lana to speak to some of these things because they bring some expertise to it. But let's start with creativity. I've done some reading. I mean, creativity is really a 21st century learning skill. I think it's becoming critical to our industry.
Yeah, so you've assigned me to be creative, talking about creativity. Fascinating, absolutely fascinating topic. And I just to start out with a couple of sort of big topics, I suppose. One is that I think, I shouldn't say this, I'll limit it to everyone I've met, not everyone in the world, but I really can't think of many people that lack creativity.
Agreed.
In a specific thing. Mm-hmm. I know people that are creative in the kitchen. I know people that are in skilled trades that are unbelievably creative in problem solving. So I think something inherent to the human animal is creativity. And actually, interestingly, animals lack this.
Right.
If you look at a squirrel's nest, for instance, 100 years ago, it looks exactly like a squirrel's nest today. They haven't made any HVAC advances or electrical systems, right? No one's been creative. No squirrel has figured out how to make a better squirrel's nest much over time. human beings have the ability to do that. And again, I think it's part and parcel of how we're wired, of how we think. And I think it used to be that there was sort of a creative class. Those were the artists and the writers and
right,
the poets and
right. Artisticness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there were, you know, the people that made things or created things or built things. And then there were people that owned things. And I think that has, well, first of all, I think that was a false distinction. But secondly, right, I think that every single one of those people had somewhere in them a creative gene that either showed itself or it didn't. You can express it or not.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I don't think it's missing in anybody. And so just for learning, mm-hmm, I think there's a couple of different things. First of all, learning designers, they can frame the problem creatively. And the ability to frame the problem, to understand the problem and then creatively think about it is a pretty remarkable skill. We always think about the solutions, but sometimes most of the creativity comes in how you think about the problem. That leads to a creative solution. Rather than a generic problem and a creative solution, I think about a creative problem consideration and then creative thinking after that.
Yeah, different ways really to frame it often bring mm-hmm. us. I think we talked about that in a previous podcast, even like realizing that the problem we thought we had was not the real problem. Mm-hmm. And so then you need an entirely different solution. And that's where you need a learning experience designer. But that's a creative way of thinking about things that not everyone could do.
Yeah. There's you know, insight and experience and intuition that goes into that, and artistry that certainly goes into that. There's a kind of relational creativity. Everybody knows someone who can walk in a room and read it.
Yep.
They just
yep.
understand the dynamics, or they're in a conversation and their questions are remarkable. I have a very good friend like this. I always tell him he's the scariest person I ever have coffee with, because he happens to be a psychologist, but well. it feels like he can read me like a book, that he can see right through me. He's highly relational, but there's no attack or there's nothing offensive here. But he's very intuitive and understanding what he's hearing when I say things.
Yeah.
And there's a definite art to that and creativity to that. Obviously, things like storytelling. Right. Everybody also knows, you know, I have several aunts and uncles who are phenomenal storytellers. They're I mean, if they sit down and go, you know, that reminds me, that's the time to listen up because you're about to hear a really great story.
Let's make for some great Thanksgiving holidays or family get togethers.
Yep. That sometimes, you know, mixed with too much alcohol goes a little far. So you gotta, you know, you want to rein that in a little bit.
Yeah, that makes another great story.
That does. Yeah. And they just keep repeating. So then there's the artistic creativity, which can be music. It can be painting. It can be poetry. I mean, those are phenomenal things. So I would encourage our listeners to think very broadly about creativity. And think of it as a nearly universal element inside every single human being. And sometimes if you think that every single person has a level of creativity, it's really interesting to listen to them, because if you listen to them carefully, eventually you'll hear it.
Yeah.
It'll come out.
Yep, agreed.
But there's also a sense, I just finished, it was just the 10th anniversary of the death of Steve Jobs. So I thought, well, I'll read Steve Jobs' book again, the Isaacson book. And fascinating, the amount of creativity that man had to understand a problem. And one of the things that fascinated me about him is he never asked people what they wanted, ever. He never developed a product by doing surveys or focus groups because he said they don't know what they want.
Right. That's true.
Mm. I need to be creative. Apple needs to be creative enough to actually solve a problem they don't understand they have yet.
Yeah,
and the book is interesting because the book says really on you know, coding and all the rest of the IT stuff, it was fairly uninteresting. He was not a skilled coder. He was not a guy that would fix your computer. I mean, he didn't really know how to do that particularly well. He could apply his mind in a specific way and solve a problem in a creative fashion that people didn't even know they had, or fulfill a need that they did not understand that they even had. And that to me is phenomenal. And I think of people like Elon Musk, or you can go back to Henry Ford. There's a whole bunch of people that are really well known. It is not always their scientific skills. It's their ability to think creatively about a problem. And so I think creativity has always been part of the human culture. But in the 21st century, and especially, I think, because of technology, it's given an outlet to creativity in ways that have never been possible before. And we're starting to understand business needs creativity, phenomenal amounts of creativity. If you want to build a big company and you want to generate wealth and you want to create jobs and all of those things, it's nearly impossible to do something like that without an extremely high level of creativity. And so that to me is essential. How to do that?
Yeah, because I think it's a differentiator. I mean, it's a game changer for companies, but that's the next question, right? If I didn't ask it, Lana was going to, well, how do we do that?
Yeah, that's all so great, but how do you, the question really isn't, how do you do creativity? I think it's how you foster it.
Right, that's really it.
How do you have a set of practices? And my habit has been to think very hard about something and then forget about it.
Oh, give some time to...
And then I don't think about it intentionally, and somewhere in some recesses of my mind, that thing is playing and I'll be out, you know, gardening tends to be what I do a lot of, as both of you have seen my garden, and a little vineyard and a little orchard. And when I'm out there and I'm dirty and I'm sweaty and all of a sudden, click.
Yeah.
There it is.
Yep.
And again, it's confirmed by one of the great creatives of all time, Don Draper on Mad Men. Right? He said, think about something very hard and then forget about it. And when I heard that in the show with the series, which I love, I was like, oh,
that's it.
That's actually what I do, because it's got to be good. Don Draper said it.
I often wake up in the middle of the night with an idea and I'm like, oh, and then I write them down. Now, I will be frank, 75% of them are horrible. I wake up in the morning like, I don't know what I was thinking.
Blue suede shoes, right. What does that have to do with anything?
But I have solved problems in the middle of the night. Your brain is just working while you're sleeping. You don't even know it.
Yeah, and I'm not a big fan of the expression white space.
I know.
But the concept is powerful. Yep. Give yourself time to think. most of us live in a world in which we react, and we don't think we're just emoting something in a moment. I'm a pretty big fan of music, and so sometimes I look up the history of a song or where it came from, and I wonder where did the motivation of the artist come to. And more often than not, they'll this phenomenal piece of music, they'll say, it just came to me. And you go, that just came to you. All those insights into human love and all these wonderful things, right? And that just came to you. Yes, it came to me in a moment. And and to me, that's a fascinating process. So finding a way, I don't know that anybody can make you creative, but you yourself can certainly create white space. But it takes some work, because we are attached to laptops, and we're attached to phones, and we're attached to books, and we're attached to task lists, and all of the things that we have to do. Being an empty nester is has been
that's helpful.
It is. So all of my wife and I have three boys. It is, and you're not just it's not endless sports and this, and you actually have time to reflect. And so I've found in the empty nester stage, I might actually be more creative than I ever have been because I have more white space to think. And then there's other ways to push it a little bit harder. Certainly professional development sessions. And it depends on your interest. Reading books, watching movies, listening to music, taking a walk, just in a single conversation. In a conversation with the right person can generate an enormous amount of creativity, because you think, wow, I'm getting a perspective that I never had before, and that perspective is intriguing to me, and somehow I need to incorporate that perspective inside my own thinking.
And your ideas bounce off of each other, and all of a sudden you're headed down this road that you never anticipated you were going there before.
Those are the best conversations. Yeah. Those are just the best conversations. So, you know, there's other ways to promote creativity in a group setting, certainly in a company setting, group escape rooms, which I'll never go in because I'm claustrophobic.
But our development team has done them, and they're like, we know not to invite you. Yeah. But
if you want somebody curled up in a ball crying themselves to sleep, I'm your person for that. So yeah, game nights. Our team has done game nights. They've done video nights. Mm-hmm. Capture the flag that the team did recently. I think things like that are exercises beyond mere team building, because we think of those things as team building, but oftentimes those are where the best conversations happen. You know, there's not this pressing thing that you have at work. So spending time with creative people, and we have a bunch of creative people, so it's so fun to just observe how they think and observe how they see the world. And if you're careful and you're attentive and you create a little bit of white space, you can actually, it's not that you're growing creativity, it's that you're allowing your creativity that's inherently in you to express itself.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, I mean, if there's one takeaway from this, I think for any L&D professional that's listening, not just the recognition that we're all creative, but really the ability to foster that on your team. And when you see somebody do something that is creative, whether it's traditionally artistic or all the other ways we talked about, you know, writing, problem solving, I would challenge you to call that out and just to give that person a little bit of a pat on the back, because it's amazing when people feel like, oh, and they might not even recognize it as creativity in themselves. Like you said, it sort of takes off from there when you are fostering that kind of environment and recognizing it.
And the flip side is true as well. I guess this is maybe my continuous improvement bent, but if you're seeing someone who all of a sudden doesn't appear to be as creative as maybe they have been in the past, I mean, to me, that's a sure tell sign that maybe they're overworked, or they need a break or something like that, because they're pushed to the limit, and it's time to take that space and recharge and get with some other creative people and see what they're thinking, and then you're off and running again.
Yeah, I know, that's actually a great point, because if there isn't margin, then there is no time to be creative. So you're just back in that reaction world of making the next thing that has to be done on your task list. So, yeah, thank you, Lana. That's a great point. So our third topic, technology. I mean, I don't know if I need to say anything. I will, but I mean, this is the world that we live in. Is just full of new and ever-changing technology. I remember a story actually from my dad years and years ago. So he's an engineer, and he was telling me that the traditional model of an instructional designer years ago, like classroom training or even like computer-based training, really, he would, if you needed, for example, a software that you needed that to be taught to new hires, you would walk down the hallway, you would provide that to the instructional designer sitting in their office, that information, and they would take it all and they would politely send you on your way. And in 3 months, you would show back up at their office door and they would hand you a massive 3-ring binder.
Oh, dear.
And you hope they were creative in what they did.
Or you might not ever see it again. They would then lead the sessions and do the facilitation of that. And again, that's how it was done. That's not a criticism of that, but I just... The rapidly accelerating world of technology has just changed so much of that. And I mean, I don't think you're in this industry if you don't love technology. I mean, I have to be honest, like the new, the shiny, to me, that's very exciting. Even when I sometimes am a little burned out needing to take that space, like it's just fun. But I think the important thing, if we've learned anything with learning science, is that we need to make sure we're applying learning science to our solutions and we're not just grasping or running after the newest, shiniest technology. Like, let's do virtual reality just for the sake of doing it. Now, again, maybe there is value in doing virtual reality for the sake of it because that meets one of my objectives. Like, my goal is to try something new to see how this rolls out with our learners, to see what it looks like. But let's apply the proper learning science to it. But if we do that, you know, let's talk about some of those new cool tools out there. We have a lot of delivery tools our listeners are familiar with, mobile, AR, VR, a lot of mixed reality. One of the things I know, Lana, you've been looking at is there's just a host of rapid authoring tools anymore that I don't want to put you on the spot here, but I know we have evaluated some of those, and maybe you want to give our listeners just a couple characteristics, like a grid that you look at those through, because I know that you can spend a lot of time chasing after those things, and then once you dig into them, you realize, well, this is rapid, but that's about the only good thing about it. Like, it doesn't, whatever that might be, but I don't know if you have off the top of your head any criteria that our listeners could listen to or look for, in that rapid development tool? Because there just seems like every day there's more of them.
There are definitely a lot of new ones. It's almost like a fad. Everybody's coming up with their own rapid development tool. But some of the things that we look at is trying to match the capability that you need, whether it's some kind of engagement activity. Is the capability there that would match what you're trying to accomplish? Okay. So the tool really does need to provide you with enough manpower, horsepower, whatever kind of power it is that so that you would be able to accomplish what you're setting out to do, but get it done in a quick way.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely, like I said, when we first started doing some of that on our team, it felt really overwhelming. And you did such a great job of kind of honing in on like key characteristics we should look for to determine if this tool actually provided anything innovative or if it was just filling another slot in the market because it was rapid.
You have to make sure that the way you're expressing this is technology as a tool.
Correct.
Technology is a tool to express our creativity, which is a good way to think about it. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really worth emphasizing something you said a few minutes ago. Don't let the technology eat your learning science.
Yeah, right. That's a great way to put it.
And that's so often we see, right? You'll see something shiny, flashy, cool. The second time through it, you start asking yourself, what's this about? And I saw the Bond movie over the weekend.
Yeah, right? I did last week,
Enormous amount of creativity. Just so many exciting scenes and beautiful, you know, scenarios and so on. Somewhere in there was a story, which I completely missed not understand at all. Halfway through the movie, I stopped caring about what the story was. And I just started like, when's the next thing going to explode?
Okay.
And I thought at some point, you know, your technology, your moving, making technology ate your script writing ability, mm-hmm. because there's not a story here. And maybe some people can show me what that was, but I didn't see it and I missed it. It wasn't the complete thing.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and that's a great argument for paying attention to your learner. So full disclosure, for better or worse, we love the Bond movies. We've seen mm-hmm. all of them. So I my husband, too, yeah. as we're walking out, he is pointing to all of the like hidden references to previous past mm-hmm. movies and how it tied up all the stories in them. So maybe, but again, somewhere along the line that you got lost in that, whereas my husband was having a great time, like, oh, yeah. that reference to that
I,
one.
I and caught a lot that. Of them. I wanted a narrative, right? Yeah. I wanted a story. Yeah. And I think we see that in learning. This has yeah. all sorts of cool pops and buzzes in it, but the learning science is not operational here.
Right.
And that's a loss because right. at the end of the day, that does not accomplish what you're trying to accomplish. And it's not what your learners need.
Right. It's a free, what is it? Bonus 5 minutes movie review content right here for our listeners. So it's
next week we'll be reviewing. We'll see.
But just quickly too, I would also encourage our listeners to look for productivity tools, project management tools. I mean, those are always growing and changing and improving if you have the ability at your company to look for those. Just a quick vignette. I recently was touring a college, and one of the cool things they had set up for all students, didn't matter what program you're in, they had multiple 3D printers. And anyone who had an idea could go to their innovation lab and just prototype stuff. I mean, it didn't matter if you are a nursing student, education student, you were in, you know, secondary education, PE, it didn't matter what it was, business. If you had an idea, you could prototype it, build it, and just... I thought, what a great, and that's technology actually advancing creativity there, which is what we want, right? Like that's the cart, the horse pulling the cart in that particular case. So, and AI, I mean, obviously we could spend an entire episode on AI and I'm not going to here, but that is powerful and it's becoming more powerful. And I think, as learning, you know, experienced designers, learning experts, that's something we always want to be evaluating and thinking through the power of it. And when do we not want the tool I happen to look at, there's hundreds of types of coaching software out there now. Mm-hmm. You can literally have AI driven. So a person in your company that needs coaching can have all AI driven mm-hmm. coaching. And I'm thinking to myself, like, that's cool, and also that's a little terrifying.
Yeah,
like, do we want a human on the other end? Probably, but again, maybe that's my bias showing.
At
those
some
are
point, with a big red button that can shut the whole thing down, yes.
Right, yeah. Right. Anyway, let's move on to our final topic. So it's one we care deeply about. We spent a lot of time studying. In particular, Lana and Jerry have been super involved in the whole concept of measurement, data analytics. And I would just love to hear how you think that is impacting our industry right now and why it's critical for L&D professionals to understand some of the core components of this.
Well, I think that you have to start by, shall we say, addressing the elephant in the room. And that is that L&Ds may not be super excited about statistics. I mean, it may not have been their favorite class in college. They may not be numbers people even. And so how do you quantify change in human behavior? I mean, that is a tough one. So maybe our go-to is just kind of ignore it and hope it goes away. I hope that's not the case, but
I think our go-to most of what I see in the industry is we go to qualitative quickly.
Right.
Right.
Here's three stories.
It felt good. Everybody was happy.
And here's the story of the following three people. They took they had the learning experience. Their behavior changed. And wouldn't it be wonderful if that's how companies ran? They don't.
Your CFO is not.
No, your CFO is not going, hey, you got three great stories for me. It's a struggle. It really is. It's a struggle.
It is, because it's not maybe our, I mean, I'm stereotyping here, but for many of us, we're not strong maybe in numbers, and it's not even how we think. And so, I mean, why bother? And especially
there's a new crisis already. There's something else that has to be solved. So I'm not going to take the time. Like, I don't have the time.
Yes, exactly. And maybe we're even afraid of that the results weren't as good as we were hoping for. But all that being said, okay, we've acknowledged the elephant in the room. Our industry is expanding to the point where we can't ignore this any longer. We have to get serious about measurement and data analytics and not be afraid of what the results are going to show.
And we should, looking at how much money is spent and good stewardship, just the sheer amount of money across, you know, just look at corporate and nonprofit, even corporate and forget higher ed or lower, just corporate and nonprofit, the amount of money that is spent in training. There have to be measurable. There just have to be measurable results.
And our learning science will tell us, if we just listen to our own advice,
right,
that if you are tested, then you're probably going to pay more attention during the learning process. And so, I mean, apply that to our own work. If we know our work is going to be tested and those results are going to be public, then that process of measuring results will actually improve our outcomes. So enough of the little sales pitch, but I feel like we need maybe a little pep talk of why this is important. Now we always, if it's a critical project, we're always going to start with a needs analysis. But if we know that we're going to be measured later, maybe we're going to pinpoint that objective, just even fine tune it a little bit more. And gathering
a little time at the beginning.
Correct. And gathering that before data of what is the status quo now before the learning initiative takes place. And Jerry's right. We can't be staying away from the quantitative data. We have to find a way to quantify where we're at currently to get an accurate picture of where we're at. And then as we design the instructional activities, the one piece of advice that I would give is to make sure you extend the practice. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times we create a learning module, pat
one
ourselves.
And done.
We did it, check that off the list. Yep. We need to consider if we really are serious about getting good results, we need to extend that practice. So maybe a follow-up animation, maybe it's a job aid, maybe it's a coach checklist, something that will continue to remind the learner what they're supposed to be doing, how they can implement it, and what results we're after. Let's be honest with them and let them know what we're hoping to achieve.
Right. And if you don't achieve what you set out to achieve, be honest about it.
Yeah.
Own it.
For sure that.
And fix it.
Yep, absolutely.
Yep. Yeah, reassess and go for more. That's what we need to do.
I like
do.
That. That's a good catchphrase. Reassess and go for more.
I already have that. It's on a bumper sticker on my car.
So you're
I have
way
no
ahead
idea
of
what
us.
It means. I didn't realize it meant this.
So, and then the other reason why to do this is, again, we need to celebrate our wins. Now, we're not always going to have a win. We've already acknowledged that. That's not unrealistic. But when you do, what a great time with the team to thank them and let them know that you even are noticing that they are improving and make sure that there's some kind of celebration.
And there's a predictive part to that too. You know, if you're creating a certain learning experience and your learners are really reacting well to it and it's changing their behavior, you can predict if you do more of that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It can actually strengthen your entire learning culture. And I think it's very, you and I and Miriam, the three of us have had many conversations about learning culture, but if you're going to understand how your learning culture is operating, where it is, where you want it to go, and what you'll know when it actually gets to where you want it to go, how do you do that apart from measurement? You have to have some measurement somewhere.
Yeah, your gut can only take you so far. Mm-hmm. You have to have real data and look at the numbers. And there's going to be some surprises, most likely. What you expect in some situations may not happen like you thought it would. But that's where you can regroup and attack it from a different side.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that's a huge topic. We can spend forever on that. And I would suspect in subsequent episodes of our podcast, we're going to be doing that. Since I made the schedule.
Yeah, you saw the schedule as you were writing it. How did that work?
Right. So we want to wrap up. We're at the point of the show where we'd like to introduce a fun and kind of inspiring portion of our podcast. So we'd like to introduce a segment called What Are You Learning Well Now? And we're going to be asking this of all of our guests and even our regular co-hosts. So Lana and Jerry have been warned about this, but I just... My gut feeling here is that, I mean, most of our listeners are curious people. We're curious people. It's actually a big part of how we hire. We want people to be curious. And so we thought it would just be fun to share what are you learning well now and kind of how that is. And this may or may not be in any way aligned to our industry. So this could be a scary question for me to ask. I'm not sure what I'll get back, but we're just excited to hear. Let me see. Lana, you want to go first? What are you learning well now?
Oh, that's an interesting question. So I was just browsing through some internet sites and not intentionally looking for sheep. I haven't sheep. Even
see,
ever.
I knew this could go off the rails right away.
Haven't ever.
Were you looking for wool? Were you looking for yarn?
I think it might have even been like a Facebook pop-up or something. I'm not sure.
Hey, look, a sheep.
Yeah.
Speaking of AI, here we go.
Yeah. So anyway, so I guess Facebook thought I needed to be presented with these sheep. So I was not trying to figure out how to raise sheep. But this picture of these lambs came up. It's the Valet black nose sheep. They are so adorable. They have been named the most beautiful sheep in the world. And
there's a picture in
by
our
other
show
sheep
notes.
Or by people. Yeah.
They are so cute. You just can't help smile, but help but smile when you look at them. And so I just started diving in and trying to figure out, like, what do these sheep need? Where did they come from? They came from Switzerland. They're quite rare. They at this point are not able to export them. So it's kind of tricky.
So you're not getting any sheep is what you're saying.
You're not getting sheep. You can be sent a few test tubes to create your own sheep.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So
what could possibly go wrong there?
So anyway, I've been learning, like, for example, a fact is that you have to have an acre of land for pasture per two sheep. So it's a big investment. They're good for meat. They're good for wool, and they're great for family pets. And just because they're so adorable and nearly extinct. So I don't know. Stay tuned. I'm not sure if I'm going to dive into taking care of sheep or not, but that's what I've been learning about.
I love that. So honestly, social media kind of influenced you. And full disclosure, Lana already owns various animals and has places for them to roam. So you're not, this was not like completely out of the
norm. Where's this going to go in my apartment?
Right. Yeah. It wasn't like that. But I love that. That's great. And yeah, now we will have to update our listeners what happened with the sheep.
Okay.
And me. I want to meet these sheep. I've seen pictures and
they're pretty cute.
They are pretty. Lana's going to start a new trend, a new pet trend. So, yeah. All right, Jerry, what are you learning well now?
Well, you told me you were going to ask me this and I thought about it. So my wife and I built a new house about a year and a half ago. And I finally got all of my books in one place. They were, for different reasons, spread out all over the place. So I did what I do. I lined them up, you know, by date and kind of, I have a section of books that friends have written, but I started at the top left with they're almost all history, so I started at the top left with the book covering the earliest period that I had. So I am working my way through books I've already read.
Oh, okay.
And there's about 1,500 of them, so I have a ways
I was gonna
to go.
Say.
But the one I'm reading right now is on Augustine. Augustine of Hippo, so from North Africa in the 4th century. And so I am relearning about the life of St. Augustine, which is absolutely fascinating. And correspondingly, because I read a whole bunch of books on the history of Greece and then Rome, and now I'm in the 4th century AD,
right.
Now I'm kind of figuring out Rome is beginning to crumble, and here's why, and he's sort of in the middle of that. So that's the short-term thing I'm learning. The longer-term thing I'm learning is, like Lana, I like to get out in the dirt and fields a little bit. And I said I have a garden. I have a vineyard that has 100 vines in it, and each vine produces about 2 gallons of grape juice. And each gallon produces about 5 bottles of wine. And so I am in year three of making some really, really bad wine.
I was going
to
say.
Yeah, yeah. So it is, you know, the clearing, I had to clear the land and I had to get rid of all the roots and dig it down 6 feet so the roots of the grapes could grow. And I've got the grape growing part down, but the winemaking, I was in science, now I'm in art.
Right.
I'm clearly into art now. And there is an art to this that I have not yet mastered. So there are some 5 gallon carboys of fermented grape juice sitting in my garage that may or may not be suitable for human consumption. I don't really
know. What about for sheep consumption?
I don't know. Maybe, yeah.
We have some happy sheep.
Oh, yeah. They're very relaxed. So I'm working on it. So I would guess probably around springtime, we're going to do a podcast where I bring in some wine. And we'll see what I'm learning. Maybe nothing. Maybe there's a whole bunch of things I need to unlearn. But that's long-term what I'm learning right now, multiple years.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We hope our listeners can, you know, my guess is you all might get some emails if we have listeners interested in sheep, wine, or books, which is quite an eclectic range.
There we go.
You can certainly.
That's a good life.
It really.
Yeah, that's not a bad life.
It is.
Or DM us on our social medias as well. But we want to wrap up here. We thank you all for your time. It's a precious resource, and we so appreciate your gift. Make sure to comment, like, subscribe, and rate us on whatever podcast platform you're listening to.
Thanks again for tuning in to the Learning Well podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please leave some feedback on whatever platform you're streaming on. We'd really appreciate it. We'll see you in the next episode.